This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, May 19th. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. The tech investing giant SoftBank has reported its worst results in history. But its losses aren't just because of the pandemic. Through its Vision Fund, the company has made huge bets on risky companies that haven't always paid off. Remember WeWork? Our reporter Rolf Winkler will join us to explain. That's coming up after these headlines. Last week, the Trump administration announced a new rule requiring chip makers that use U.S. technology to get a license before working with the Chinese telecom giant Huawei. Now, Huawei has responded, calling the action, quote, arbitrary and pernicious, and saying that the rule could jeopardize Huawei's ability to maintain telecom networks. But our senior editor, Bob Davis, reports that the industry's convoluted supply chains could make the administration's rule difficult to enforce.
With all the intermediate steps in producing computer chips, they go from, you know, making wafers to adding components to testing and assembling. There's many, many different steps. You can lose that traceability of knowledge, and it might make it easy for a company to deny that they know where the technology came from or where it's headed, and that could be a loophole that would allow companies not to need a commerce license to supply Huawei.
The video platform TikTok announced on Monday that it's getting a new CEO, the Disney executive Kevin Mayer. At Disney, Mayer had been in charge of the streaming service Disney Plus, and he'd actually been passed over to replace Bob Iger as the chief of Disney earlier this year. Now Mayer is joining TikTok's parent company ByteDance as COO, where he'll lead global expansion in its music and gaming businesses. And of course, as the head of TikTok. And Uber has announced more cost-cutting measures. The CEO announced in an email to staff on Monday that the ride-sharing company would be eliminating 3,000 jobs and closing 45 offices. Uber will also reevaluate big bets on areas like freight and self-driving technology. The cuts are the second round of layoffs in recent days, meaning that Uber has shed about a quarter of its workforce in under a month. Stay-at-home orders have been a major challenge for Uber's ride-hailing business, which accounted for most of the company's revenue before the pandemic. Uber is, of course, one of the major companies that make up SoftBank's Vision Fund. SoftBank reported its results for the 2019 fiscal year on Monday, and after the break, we'll talk about those results and what they could mean for companies like Uber in the future. In the past four decades, SoftBank Group has made a name for itself as one of the biggest names in tech investing. Since 2017, it's been pursuing an aggressive strategy of throwing huge sums of money at early stage startups in the digital space through its Vision Fund. On Monday, SoftBank reported its results for the 2019 fiscal year, giving us insight into how it's been impacted by the pandemic, and also whether its investment strategy has been paying off. Our reporter, Rolf Winkler, has the latest, and he joins us now. Thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
All right. So, Rolf, before SoftBank even posted its results, it had told investors to expect a $17 billion write-down. Can you tell us about the actual results?
That was the key result. They had forecast a lot of this. For the year, SoftBank ended up with a $9 billion loss when you factor in the investment results with all the other stuff they have going on, including their operations. The other things that happened, Jack Ma, who is the founder of Alibaba, was on the board of SoftBank. He's leaving the board. That was a key thing we learned today. And oh, by the way, they're also paring back some of their stake in T-Mobile, which they got with the merger with Sprint. They're also paring back some of their Alibaba stake, which is why a reason Jack Ma is leaving the SoftBank board.
So do these announcements give us any more clues as to where SoftBank is right now?
Sure. What we know about SoftBank is that it's a bit overlevered. They've got a lot of debt, so they have to repair their balance sheet. They have to sell down some assets so they can pay off some debt. But also they want to buy back a lot of stock. That's a main thing that's going on ever since Elliott Management, the activist investor, got involved and encouraged the company to go ahead and do some share buybacks.
Why do they want to do that?
Boost the price, boost the stock price. A lot of times activist investors, their goal is to, in effect, lever up a company. If you use the cash to buy back stock, you're in effect increasing the ability of the company to boost its return on equity. Right. If you believe in the future of the company, if you buy back stock, the people who continue to hold the stock, their returns will be boosted.
So let's zoom in on the Vision Fund. This is SoftBank's flagship fund, as it were. You told us in yesterday's show that SoftBank had taken on a risky strategy for this fund from the very start, that they were funneling huge sums of money into early stage companies. How did the Vision Fund fare in 2019?
Not well. They had a whole bunch of big issues. I mean, the biggest issue everybody knows is WeWork, the shared office space company. They just collapsed. It's very easy to grow quickly. A lot of startups, a lot of private tech companies have done this. They've grown quickly. Can you call it a tech company? You can't, but nevertheless, it's still part of this universe. They've grown quickly by, you know, selling a dollar for 80 cents. You lose money, you can grow fast. And WeWork did that like crazy, signing a whole bunch of long-term leases, renting out the space, and just growing and growing and growing with an eye toward profitability sometime in the distant future. That was actually a common theme of a lot of SoftBank investments, where they're just growing at all cost, never mind the bottom line. This is all going to make sense in the future. The problem is, when WeWork happened and the public market said, you know, we're not going to buy these shares, we're not going to let you IPO, we're not interested in a company losing this much money. Well, then all of a sudden, someone like Masasone realizes, wait a minute, the strategy I've had for all of my companies, I mean, I've got to get an exit too. I've got to be able to sell these companies off. Eventually, most of them, many of them probably buy it via an IPO. And if the public market is telling him growth at all costs is not what we're going to pay for, he had to readjust his strategy. And that is what happened towards the last fall into the end of last year. And then, oh, by the way, COVID just hammered them even more, because a lot of their top investments are really in vulnerable industries.
I was going to say, we're talking about 2019, but we've obviously seen in the first 3 months of this year, a lot of those tech companies that they'd put big money into, Uber, for example, also taking a massive hit. What are they looking like for the first quarter?
Good question. So for the first quarter, the quarter ended March. That's what they just reported. They had a lot of write-downs there because, of course, at the end of March, that's when the market had declined quite a bit. Now, it's come back a lot in the second quarter. A lot of stimulus has brought stocks back. So you can see them writing up the valuation of some of their investments here in the current quarter, which could help them. That said, the actual fundamentals of the businesses in which they've invested, a lot of them are in deep, deep trouble. Uber said Monday they were going to lay off another 3,000 people. They've already said they were going to lay off 3,700. And the CEO said that their ride-hailing business, it's their core business, is off 80%. Four-fifths of the business gone. And yet, by the way, the stock is up on the year. Go figure that. But that's a discussion for another podcast. Point being, you know, the long-term prospects for this business are maybe they're better, maybe more people will get in a car, and that's why versus getting on public transit, and that's why the stock's up. But for the moment, they are just bleeding badly. And that's true of a lot of their investments. They've got three of their biggest investments are ride-hailing, Didi in China, Uber, and then Grab in Southeast Asia. Then you have Oyo Hotel and Homes in India, which has seen a gigantic hit to its business, down 50 to 60%. Of course, there's WeWork in there, which has also, you know, they already had problems last fall. And, you know, you want to talk about it, a business that's going to struggle in the middle of a pandemic, take one that's been signing long-term leases to sublease office space, and everyone then goes and works from home.
Yeah. And I think what you brought up earlier is really a big question. You know, the idea of throwing money at visionary leaders who weren't profitable but had big ideas that were disrupting industries was really the focus of the Vision Fund. That was already kind of coming to an end before the pandemic. What does this mean for tech and for those kind of innovative, industry-changing ideas in the future? Are they going to see less money available to them?
Nah, I don't think so. In fact, you could make an argument that they may see more money right now, because again, stimulus, the amount of money that's flowing into the economy that's being printed is epic. And that money's going to want to find a return in a zero interest rate environment. A lot of that's going to go to tech, especially since tech is benefiting, parts of tech are going to benefit dramatically from working from home. The thing that's to note about SoftBank's strategy, investing in visionary founders, that's what venture capital is all about. Often people who haven't figured a business model out yet, aren't making money, you're just betting on someone who you think is smart and is going to solve a big problem. But historically, the way that works is you bet on that person at the beginning. You give them a big valuation, you know, okay, the business isn't there yet, but I think you're smart. I'm going to give you $20 million here. And by the way, Masa did that famously with Jack Ma and Alibaba. $20 million investment early on turns into an amazingly huge lucrative investment down the line. That's true venture capital, early stage. The problem with SoftBank is what he decided to do is he would throw a whole bunch of money at visionary founders later in their life cycle. So they're much more mature companies, even though they're much larger companies. Even though they're larger, they haven't yet matured to the stage where they can make money. They're not yet profitable, and they haven't yet settled on that business model, even though they're very late in their development by most startup standards. And so you're sort of taking all of the risk of a venture capital model, right? Betting on somebody who doesn't have a settled business model and compounding it by adding the risk of late stage growth, investing at a high valuation when you don't have a lot of people who can come in after you. And by the way, in illiquid stock, in private companies, you can't easily sell to someone else. So it was just really not a good recipe from the beginning.
So all that said, SoftBank has been planning to raise cash for a second Vision Fund. How likely does that seem now?
That was basically dead earlier this year, and Masa even said on when they reported earnings, he said it's not going well. Quote, "Sometimes I get asked if the funding for Vision Fund 2 is okay," said Mr. Sohn. Quote, "It's not." The reality is they have a second Vision Fund, mostly using their money. Using SoftBank has some money, but they weren't able to get money from outside investors who just said, you know what, we've put enough money into your strategy, and it's time for that first fund to generate some returns, get us some liquidity before we decide to give you any more.
All right. Our reporter, Rolf Winkler, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, before we go, there's still time to share your work-from-home tech stories and questions with us. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be back on Friday to share her best tips and solutions. You can call us and leave us a voice message at the number in the description, or you can email Joanna at joanna.stern@wsj.com. And that was your Tech News Briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.